Johnson, this is a work session this morning. We're slightly less formal than normal, and we are just trying to learn about your old capital projects, the status of them, where they are, and then those capital projects that you have in the governor's capital budget book for this year. Okay? We'll start with your old authorized. You might want to give us an overview, sir, of how you develop your capital projects, where they come from, how do you get them, and then we will interrupt you at any time for questions, if that's okay. And this is not an inquisition. This is more just a learning experience for us. All right? You may begin, sir. Chairman. Oh, wait. Hang on a second. We're going to be in Volume 3 of currently authorized projects. Volume 3. And the Department of Labor is about 15% in. Okay. We have all these volumes of blue books, Commissioner, and it gets us all confused all the time.
Well, I have with me Nico Buston. He's our finance guy, and he's never confused.
Oh, good.
But with the capital projects that we have for this year, we are already completed with most of them, or else we will be completed by this fiscal year on all of the capital projects. So if you want to get into them, we could certainly have Nico get.
Okay, on your pending, how do you get your capital projects, Commissioner? Do they just come to you from the legislature, or does your department formulate a plan and criteria?
We have a plan from each of the different divisions. They bring to us what they envision they need for the following year. And we just sit down and take a look at that and figure out which ones we think is of a high priority and what we really need, and just go from there.
All right. Are there any questions on his authorized capital projects? And you think you'll be done with all your old projects by when, sir?
No later than, June 30th.
Are you going to have any money to lapse?
I think that we will have a little bit of money, and I'm not, I think it's in the $20,000 to $30,000 range.
Yeah, there's a couple of projects that right now we might extend over June. They're in relation to data processing equipment upgrades. We have a computer upgrade that we just completed in October, and there's some money set aside in what we call the training and building fund, and that is not scheduled to be completed until the latter part of calendar year 85. We currently, with the Department of Administration, going through a major planning effort of data processing resources so we can coincide with them. And so some of these data processing projects we have been put on hold to prioritize to see how we can streamline with administration. And so that's where we might be delaying and see if there's some money left that either administration has already taken care of or we can use some of their services.
Okay, on the first one, your rural office renovation for Bethel, Kotzebue, and Dillingham. Work completed, final billing pending from DOTCOB. Is that a closed out project?
Right.
Okay. CPU replacement, what's that?
Okay, basically that was an 82 appropriation. We have gone through a couple what we call mainframes. We basically get our mainframe from funded by the federal government, and because of the tight funding availability in the federal government, we have been kind of slow in as far as state of the art, and so we have been working with old models. This was an older upgrade from a 360, 370 series, and so on. And so this is completed right now, and it's 82 appropriation.
Any questions from the committee about their old capital projects? Okay, hearing none. Let's go to the new ones in Volume 1, Governor's Capital Budget.
I have one, ma'am, Karen.
Yes, Senator Leisner, I'm sorry.
Just a general question. Are these capital projects totally funded with state dollars, or is it matched federal money, or how do we handle that?
Most of the items that are data processing related, we go to the federal government first because they're for unemployment insurance and employment services. Because of the tight money availability, we have access to the training and building fund. That's a fund where penalty and interest for the unemployment insurance fund is collected, and if there's no federal funding available, then you can ask for that money and then go through the legislative process, and once it's been appropriated, then we go through that. The geocode conversion is a general fund program, and There's a couple other general fund programs. Mostly, the general fund programs will be for what we refer to as the state programs, which are mostly in the worker protection area.
Well, are the federal dollars quoted here, or are they all mixed in?
On these sheets, they are not, but they are on the... they're not on these sheets. This is what you're looking at.
Not identified.
They are in the budget for the new ones.
One other question, Madam Chair. You said, well, in either case, if there's funds available in this particular fund, it's still federal money, right?
If we have identified federal funding and there is federal funding, we ask for it. If we know there's no federal funds, then we ask for training and building fund, if it's for a federal program. If it's for a state program, we ask for general funds.
Okay.
The new capital projects, then, that are in volume one of the governor's capital budget book, way at the end. Any questions on the commissioner's new capital projects? Commissioner, just give us a moment for everybody to find it.
Sure.
It looks like all data processing equipment.
There's some workstations, some furniture for our offices, because we have been getting a significant increase in, like, unemployment insurance claims, and our premises are pretty crowded right now, so we asked for some general fund in marginal furniture.
And so also, that's the modular workstations is
right.
Your new furniture.
Right.
Madam Chairman, the toxic monitoring, that is not that's that's equipment for the protection of the compliance officer when they went out on the project that had that type of waste.
Of all of these capital budgets, Commissioner, which one is the highest priority for your department?
I think that we have it pretty well in order.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Any questions for the Commissioner? With the permission of the committee, shall we dismiss the commissioner this morning? Hearing no objections. Commissioner, thank you very much for coming. Commissioner Reynolds, Department of Education. Okay. Now, status of currently authorized capital projects are in volume two. Commissioner, we'd like to have an overview of how you formulate your list for capital projects in the department, what criteria or whatever that you use, and then we want you to give us the status of the old projects, particularly interested in any money that you may lapse, any requests from the communities for reallocation or reappropriation of any of those monies before we get into your new ones, your new capital projects.
Madam Chair, you began with a question of how do we develop a list. I understood it, and Mary Hockler, whom I'm sure you know, has presented to you the two printed publications which describe the procedures, the salmon-colored one, and the criteria used. The criteria appear in the white-bound or white-covered booklet. On page 4, you will find the basic criteria that are used in the development of the capital budget for the funding of school facilities. In a nutshell, we have two different capital budgets, in effect, although they come together. One is the extensive review of school construction needs throughout the state, based upon requests which come either from municipalities where appropriate, or school districts where appropriate, and we put them together and then rate them on the basis of those criteria that are suggested on page 4. As you know, we have an overall list. It contains probably $500 million or more dollars worth of construction, and they are prioritized or put in a priority order in keeping with the criteria which you see there. I think that then covers that side, Senator, of the concern you asked initially. The other side is the materials which we have requested for the work of the department in supporting, providing, assisting schools to function more effectively. And this also includes those other responsibilities which the department has, such as the museum. It may be appropriate to use that to illustrate. You'll see on the in the actual request and the governor's response and the governor's budget figure towards the bottom of the very first page, which has $2 million under it. Just for your own recollection, I'm sure you all remember, this is the third year of a phased purchase of the Sheldon Jackson collection. So when you ask a question perhaps later, what is the highest priority, that of course would be the highest priority for the department's list, since we have purchased two-thirds of that collection and now believe that the third phase must be purchased. How do we come by these lists? And I'm working now, although you made reference to the past, Madam Chair, maybe I should proceed to explain, and I will do. I'll be guided by your direction here. But in the on the page that I referred to, which appears in the Volume 1 Capital Budget, our first page, which is an unnumbered or an unreadable, as far as I'm concerned. Page 5, Education. I was referring to the $2 million and the priority and the way that, I think I implied the way that got put together, but if not, I mean, clearly when we bought two-thirds of a collection, we ought to buy the rest of it. We are in the process of renovating the museum over there. That is such a superb collection that we have to do something about getting it around the state. It can't be something that you can see only in a corner of Alaska, in Sitka, for example, although it has to be primary there. So there's that one. Just by way of example, if you look farther up, there's a transmitter request from Fort Greeley. There are a number of requests there, but I want to use this to illustrate, if I may. The Fort Greeley facility has such low wattage that it cannot reach more than a 5-mile radius when all weather and other conditions are exactly right. So here we are with a very fine collection of materials in Learn Alaska getting very greatly increased usage. We have a report on that which I believe has already come over, but if not, we can see that it does. So the point is, if we're going to try to make ourselves that facility and that program, Learn Alaska, effective, that particular transmitter has to be upgraded so that it has a greater capacity in a community which, as you know, is so widely dispersed over a large area that, as a matter of fact, even the school does not get a very good signal, and it's only a mile and a half or 2 miles from the actual transmitter. It's in that way, on individual cases, that we develop a list, this second list, if you will, for capital outlay. There are also material considerations there, Madam Chair, that I think you ought to take a look at. For example, materials development, Pacific Rim, $350,000 was requested. The governor supported that. That is in keeping with the educational thrust developed by the governor's committee, which is dealing with Pacific Rim initiatives. And just one of those items, as you'll see when you get closer to it, is the business of the development of maps that are appropriate to the Pacific Rim. Most of the maps that young people work with are still the old Mercator projections, which, if we look at them closely, don't even properly represent the size of Alaska related to the rest of the North American continent. And even more than that, do not show, because we have divided our continents up in such a way that, as a matter of fact, the Pacific as a basin is not shown in any one map very effectively in most of the maps used in schools. So we're requesting, for that purpose, the funding possible to develop the appropriate maps and to purchase those maps. Now, those maps are developed in certain places. We've got to get those and put them together. So there you are. You've got three different, very different looks at capital outlay. The only other one that might be further illustrative is the materials which are requested for such things as library grants, the Arts Council. I think many of those are self-explanatory unless you have a specific request for information.
Questions for the commissioner?
General question.
Yes, sir. If you aren't going to ask it, I will.
Yes, thank you. I have two questions, Commissioner, and I recognize the department was in new management a year ago. But when the school construction match program was changed from 50-10, it became an unfair and also a very destructive problem for the district I represent. What suggestions is the department, what suggestions do you have, and what follow-through is the department taking to support the construction, let's just say in the Matsu Borough, where we have a nightmare? We have, well, you know, from your years of experience in education, that it is a nightmare, so I won't go into all the components of that nightmare. You surely know by now as well as I do. But the double shifting, probably for the next 12 years of students in the first grade, and then we go on from there to worse. We're the third largest school district in the state. We've always paid a substantial tax compared to virtually every other borough for school support. In some ways, depending on the value of the housing in the area, we're bonded up. And we export all of our jobs, practically, so that tax base for the industrial sector is not there. But we get the bedrooms, and we get the children. There surely is a terrifying emergency there. And I've worked with it in Valdez, we resolved it. I've worked with it in Anchorage, Fairbanks. It moves around. But it's moved there, and it's moved there with a tremendous force over the last 3 years. Do you have any suggestions? Does the government have any suggestions? Are they going to do anything, declare an emergency, get funds up rainy day account? What is going to happen?
Well, I wish I could say, because as you know, Senator Curtula, I don't have the full authority in that kind of an area, particularly under the legislation as it's drawn in Alaska. But there is no question that we understand fully the very serious pressure population all through the rail belt, that is rail belt meaning for me anyway.
Kenai to
Fairbanks, in effect, particularly in light of that new infantry division that's going into Fairbanks. Matsu certainly has the most serious problems. As a matter of fact, later today I'm meeting with representatives from there. How do we go about trying to resolve those things? And I think that's something that you and the legislature will have to wrestle with first. But you'll notice in our criteria that we place as one of the most important the unhoused students. As I recall it, it's criterion number two. And therefore, from the department's standpoint, a Matsu project would probably rate very high, no matter what the project was. Now, in another way of answering you, we have proposed to the State Board, and the State Board, I believe, will turn over to the legislature at its next meeting, turn over to the governor, a piece of legislation for capital construction. It makes some suggestions for rather significant changes in the way capital construction is managed, with an eye towards just the problem you're concerned with. That is, the high priority needs should be met first, particularly when funds become limited. Then the question is, what are high priority needs? Who determines those needs? What are the criteria? In short, I think the department fully understands it. We have placed Matsu projects high in the general priority list. So much of the rest of it is really in the hands of the legislature, whether you're using a 90-10, a 50-50, a 70-30, some other kind of a split, and most importantly, where does the project rate in the list?
Are you going to talk to the governor further about this problem? He has been there. He has indicated a certain support in the capital budget for some modicum of school construction, but it just barely scratches the surface. And obviously that makes school construction for the valley then prevents the valley from getting any of the attendant roads, water, sewer, and all those things that are in his budget that are important. So
I certainly continue.
We're very concerned, as you well know, and I see the delegation from that Sioux down again. It's the first year they've ever had a lobbyist, so they're showing that concern, too.
If I can
continue
on your line of questioning, Senator
Curtula,
does the school board develop this list of capital projects? Do they vote, debate this list?
The overall list of capital,
Your priority list, yes. Your priority list that's in this budget, has it been voted on by the state school board?
Yes, it has.
Okay. When is the Matsu Valley and their need for schools, would that be considered an emergency situation? In other words, has their problem, is the magnitude of their problem great enough that the state school board is aware of it?
The state school board is certainly aware of it. Several members come from that area, and some come from near, well, from near that area. They are well aware of it.
Are they taking any initiative to try to help solve that problem? Do they consider that problem an emergency?
Question of an emergency, I can't answer. Madam Chair, they consider it extremely important that children have adequate facilities.
So they aren't doing anything special except maybe wringing their hands and saying, oh my God, this may be a problem here. They're not taking any initiative to try to solve that problem.
They supported the list that we provided in the priority order in which we provided it without any changes to the governor's office. And they followed that with conversations directly with the governor.
Does the school board, let's say a roof fell in somewhere, let's say Sitka Elementary, if there's such a critter, flood came through or roof, they lost their roof, would the state school board take any initiative to try to get emergency funds to that school?
They would expect us to do that. They would take the initiative necessary to make sure that we had made whatever effort was necessary. And as you know, if you look in that on page 4 there, that life and health safety are criteria number 1. So
what do they do? What are the procedures? I mean, do they just sit there? How do they get that information out to us? I'm just trying to figure out if they have any procedure, any mechanism in which to handle what they would perceive as an emergency situation.
Certainly, the mechanism would be that a piece is placed on their agenda which describes the situation. They vote in favor of it, and whatever, I mean, assuming they vote in favor of it,
mm-hmm.
and then they proceed to take that directly to the governor for the governor's action. They are, after all, then, part of the executive arm, and that's the procedure that they would use to do it. In general, we have found ways to respond to specific issues of that kind. If you want, why, we can provide some examples of that. I think there all of the mechanisms are in place to do it. Sometimes the cash may not be there, but so far, to my knowledge, in the last 2 years, I'm not aware of any situation where there was not sufficient funding immediately available for that kind of purpose.
Well, I'm just wondering, has there been any history? The rainy day account, for instance, is sitting there for emergencies. The governor may declare an emergency under whatever criteria.
Yes.
And there doesn't say it has to be a natural disaster. And I'm just wondering, does the situation in the Mat Valley qualify as a rainy day account emergency?
I think at this point it's getting very close to it in terms of unhoused students. But in terms of safety of students, I do not believe that it has reached that point. By safety, I'm talking about the kind of thing where it is an unhealthy condition, or, for example, as in a couple of the, or in one of the recent Anchorage school situations where there appeared to be a weakness in the roof and it was likely to collapse. That kind of thing, as you know, it was evacuated immediately. Of course, we're in a cooperative relationship with the local superintendent under those conditions and with the local school board.
Does anybody have any questions?
Senator
Petula.
One of the interesting things, of course, you can batter them down, but is when those 100-mile-an-hour gusts come through the valley, why, those portables are in some danger at all times.
Senator Elias.
Madam Chair, if we're looking at emergencies, how would you classify the asbestos in schools?
Asbestos in schools would certainly be called an emergency, as you can see with, for instance, the article last night in the newspaper, Bartlett, the moving of all of the furniture. That's an emergency, whether it has, I don't put it in the same league if we're talking the details of emergencies, that a roof in impending condition of collapse is quite the same, but I think it's very serious. And Jim Tozer, who is with me, Madam Chair, I'm sorry I didn't introduce him sooner. You probably know him. He is, for a significant period of recent history, Mr. Building Construction, as far as schools are concerned. And it may be that I should defer to him on some of these questions in case he has specific examples or others that could be useful. But in regard to the asbestos thing, Senator, he has been in close contact with that. We have pressed it hard. He has, with the help of Jim Kelly, been working towards some other sorts of solutions for the asbestos question. There are two approaches to the asbestos question, as you probably know, and I don't want to take your time with them unless you really want to get into that kind of thing. But one is to try to clear the building completely. That's the approach being taken at Barton. Of all asbestos that's in there, in whatever form it may be, friable or not. And the other approach is to contain it. And obviously, containing is a good deal less expensive than ripping a school apart to take all of it out. And the question is, how do we deal with those two? Saving money on that kind of thing and being assured of the safety of the children is essential. Would it be appropriate, Madam Chair, to ask Jim if he's got any responses to either that or any other question that I've already tried to answer?
Senator Lyson?
I guess I'm trying to really understand whether or not the asbestos in the school would qualify for an emergency such a magnitude that money from the rainy day account could be used to resolve it. In your opinion, is that of a much of that emergency of the nature that that money could be well used in that area?
Conceivably, it could be, but I think the issue really is what's the quality of the air in the school and there are ways to test that. Jim, maybe you'd add.
Yeah, the air quality test is probably the best way to determine whether it's truly an emergency situation. If the air quality test shows that the air is pure enough so it meets EPA standards, then would be the assumption that truly an emergency condition did not exist. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't take whatever steps are necessary to either contain, confine, or remove the materials that are in the building, but it can be done in a manner which doesn't require immediate closure of the building and immediate evacuation of the occupants. And that's basically what we found, mostly in the state, that the air quality tests generally are pretty good.
Okay, bless your heart. Okay. Any other questions? Senator Fisher.
Can I ask one concern about bonding and capital projects?
Sure.
With declining revenue, I guess I'm concerned that there's a possibility out there that school districts, I don't know whether you want to call it an abuse, but maybe abusing the bonding system, especially in light of the fact that we now take 50-50. And let me give you an example. If the school district floats a bond issue and the bond says one high school at so-and-so for say, up to $20 million, and they have it built for 19, they now have $1 million left. Okay, now that's money that they can come to the state and say, now we'd like to have a warehouse. We already have $1 million. How about you going along with it? And I don't know of any cases, maybe you do turn them down, but I have a high suspicion that very seldom do you ever turn them down. So what happens, the public originally think they're getting a high school. Bond issue could be totally inflated, knowing that they're going to have this extra money. So with that $1 million, they come to the state and say, we want to build a warehouse for $2 million. We already have our local money, and then you go along with the others. And it seems to me that if there's a contract there between the public and the school district, maybe the state should be a little more reserved on allowing this because it affects every other school district in the state as we take away from that fund. So what can we do, I guess, to prevent that in the future? I know in our area, we're going to be floating almost a $75 million bond issue this coming fall. And if you take, it's only 5% of that inflated, that's an awful lot of money later that's going to deprive somebody else, assuming that the bond issue carries. What can we do to prevent that? I call it an abuse, and I think it is an abuse of the system. How can we prevent that in the future from happening?
We can develop a very much more orderly process for the distribution of money, and we can build for less money, more facilities.
Is there a possibility, I know in one particular case, the Attorney General's office, I had inquired about this, and they felt that specific one was so specific that that money could not be used elsewhere, and yet it was. Can you do something in writing to get back to me so if it takes legislation, at least I'd like to be a sponsor of that legislation, because I think, I don't know, it's just one district, but I assume it's pretty federal.
I would think it probably takes some change in the language of the statute for us to be much tighter than we are. Other ways to handle that at the local level would be the wording of the bond issue could be written in such a manner to restrict the funds to only those projects listed on the bond issue. And that would stop any additional projects from coming along being funded later.
Madam Chair, if I could just, the one bond issue was that way, but what happens, the bond council now is coming around, what they'll say is, it'll be billed as a new high school, but in there there'll be language and any or all other needs, so-and-so and so-and-so. And I'm saying that that's the unfair part of it. Because the public thinks that they're committing their local funds to a high school, and then later nobody really checks into it, but we find out that, my God, there was a thing down there that they know the public would never approve of, but they can take that money and put it down there. This is what I object to. So maybe we can tighten that up somehow.
We have the same problem about these. They've got some money. I think the bond issue was passed 6 or 7 years ago. They've got money left, and they're planning on doing something else with it. And I don't know right now, without checking the Attorney General's office, whether statutory we are in a position to prohibit that or not. It isn't.
Well, I guess what I'm asking, Madam Chair, if it can, has any request with this extra money ever been turned down by the department? I'm looking at your priorities, you know, health and safety surely doesn't fit, unhoused students. And you go down the line, and some of these structures don't even fit there, and yet other people have a real critical need, such as Palmer. We're going to have a housing need. But if we use that extra money up with frivolous type things,
basically,
then the crunches are going to be taken care of.
Basically, I don't think we have turned anybody down.
We don't what?
We haven't turned anybody down.
Maybe we need to.
Well, we feel that very strongly, but we do not at the present time have the capacity to do so. And among other things, your suggestion or concern clearly identifies one of the real problems. We should not provide more money than the building under competitive bidding should cost. And we do that. We are very much like the individual who arrives in town and says, I have $100,000 to spend, to the local real estate agent, and you can be pretty sure that you'll spend $100,000. We do not have building the law, a way whereby we get the best price for the building.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, a couple of questions. In the classroom and laboratory space, the criteria that you use, 8 elementary students, 11 secondary students, are those the criteria in the Molly Hooch case?
Excuse me, I didn't hear the end of your statement, Senator.
Are the criteria, 8 elementary students, 11 secondary students, are those the criteria of the Molly Hooch case?
No, the Molly Hooch case is considerably lower than that. That is, in the Molly Hooch case, if there is one unhoused high school student, a school must be provided. So those are sort of compromised, are they not, Jim, between what might be more customary elsewhere?
Well, if it's one student, the program must be provided.
Yes, the program, school, which may or may not mean.
We generally follow those basic minimums in terms of establishing a regular school.
Okay, with regard to your criteria, starting with health and safety, then going on to housing of students, and then to general use facilities, it would appear that by drafting a capital budget request as you have, I have a hard time figuring out how the criteria really applies. Because you've got, unless you can meet all of the needs in terms of health and safety and classroom and laboratory space, how do you get further down the list to other things?
Very seldom do, depending upon the amount of money that's available, excepting in such situations where, for whatever reasons, a project is chosen out of that priority order.
Well, how do you get, arts council, capital funds, library funding, all these other things through the Department of Education budget request?
I tried to make in my initial statement a distinction, Senator, between those things which are for schools and those things which are departmental, and we'll regularly avoid mingling the two on the grounds that they are of such different concerns that they are not really comparable, and then leave to the executive, the chief executive, and the legislative branch the proper melding of those things. If you ask us to meld them at some point and put them in priority order, then we have a different set of criteria that we're operating from.
Well, I'd kind of like to see what the criteria are from the mission of the Department of Education. And how they do meld, because they're both in the same budget request. What are the top, how would this come out in priority order, following your own criteria system in terms of proposing capital budget items?
Health and safety of students and unhoused students would rate above all other concerns. But by the same token, we're charged with other responsibilities. And one of them, as I pointed out, was that museum. Now, it would seem to me that if you put the museum's final $2 million payment to buy that collection against the needs of the state in terms of unhoused or children living in going to school in unsafe conditions, you've got a very difficult decision to make. If you're asking us to make it, we'll proceed to make it. But ultimately, it is a decision which you, as representative of the people, have to make more than... If our statement is going to be influential with you, we certainly will make the statement, but I made the general statement that with the exception of finishing that, the first test, if you were down to just a very small number of dollars, would be for children who are unhoused and children who are in unsafe conditions. Now, I can, Senator, it's not the answer perhaps that you want. We can put the two together. I don't know whether it's very useful for us to put it together because all it does is further throw into the hopper some other kinds of concerns. Our primary premise would be children first.
Madam Chair, I would like a prioritized list from the Department of Education from top to bottom of those projects in priority order that you feel should be funded through the legislative process.
Will you give us any limit in terms of numbers of dollars?
As long as it's in absolute priority order, it can be cut at any point. Whatever can be afforded A true priority list doesn't, the limits at top or bottom don't matter.
Our priority list is before you already in the form of the basic list that was developed by the Department of Education. That list is not the same as the list in this particular budget. I don't know that we have to go very far with much farther than to make sure that you've got a copy of that REAA list, the cities and boroughs list, the list is a third list of those which have been phased programs. And I think if you've got those would be the first choices as far as we're concerned for money, and we would insert one like the museum somewhere in that list. But now, if you're asking us to do that, we'll do that.
Yeah, I would like to have you meld those three, so that your criteria, because I think you have the capacity to evaluate much better than we do in terms of those criteria. Mm-hmm. And if you could meld those three things together based on the criteria in your own, because, you know, of all the departments of state government, you took the criteria-based budget approach more seriously than anyone else did. And you developed a system that I think reflected it, at least in the terminology, better than anyone else did. And I'd like to see how all the projects filter through that.
We can do it. I think we will do it. Let's just leave it at that. We'll do it. But I think the other question I asked you is important to me, Senator. We have been building a list which has diluted our capacity to stand behind that list. If you look at the total departmental list, it's upwards of what, Jim? 500 million? If we had some even hint from the governor's office or your office, that is, from the legislature, as to what was likely, then we could concentrate and do a more refined list. You're correct. We are trying to follow, and I suspect we do it about as well as anybody does in the context of the Alaskan situation. We make an effort to put those in proper order. If somebody told us, we are talking about a $100 million total for this purpose, or a $50 million, or a $5, I'm not lobbying for larger or smaller, it changes the way you do your work to develop that list. As it stands now, we have to make elaborate efforts with a minimum staff to run all of those. And Jim exists with two other people to do this job. That is not adequate. Jim, have I got that right, or have you got three?
Go ahead, Senator.
I understand that.
I'm not complaining about doing it. We'll do it.
Okay, I understand the point. All I can do is speak for myself in the district that I've represented for the last 7 years, and that generally, in our efforts, we've provided about a third to a half of the total amount that's been available in capital to that district has been in education. If you can assume the kind of numbers that are projected with a $300 million revenue reduction, and what's projected through the operating budget and everything else, then you'd probably be looking at something like a third to a half of $250 million, and probably $100 million would be a pretty good figure to work on.
I notice in this budget we're working off a total of what?
Sixty-nine, isn't it? Yeah.
The governor's budget is 69?
But that would be $100 million. REAs, municipal lists,
phase programs,
all education priorities statewide.
You want us to put one single list and present it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we can do that.
Fine.
Gentlemen, I want to go to, if you're finished with that line of questioning, on the old projects. Let's take Nenana, for instance. $398,000 authorized for remodel and upgrade of Nenana. Who got that money?
Get the Nana?
Yes.
The school district.
Okay. Do you have any oversight? How do you know? I noticed all through here, the amount that was authorized is what you're saying is going to be spent. That's sort of unusual. Most people had variances of numbers and they had a lapse amount. How do you know that Nenana is going to spend all that money? And do you have any oversight to ensure that they're utilizing that money for what they were supposed to have it spent for?
Okay, Essentially, the system works this way. We grant them part of the money up front. They go out to the A&E firm.
How much? What percentage do you grant up front?
40%.
How much?
40%.
Okay.
They go out to an A&E firm and provide themselves and us with a set of preliminary design drawings. We review those drawings to make sure it's consistent with the language of the legislation and consistent with what they said they're going to do. Also, then they continue with us and they develop it into a full set of design documents, which they present us along with the corresponding contract documents. Again, we review them to make sure they're consistent with legislation and their own program specifications. At that point in time, then they go out for bid. And when they award the contract...
Do you require bid on all your jobs?
Excuse me?
Do you require each school district to bid for their jobs?
We generally require every job over $100,000 to be bid. There are some exceptions we grant periodically based on where we perceive it might be better for the district to do it some other method. But for the most part, we require them to bid.
Okay, can I have your list of exceptions that you've granted to school districts, municipalities, and REAAs over the last 5 years on the contracting procedures?
Sure can. It would be over the last 3 years, really, because part of that, Department of Transportation had been responsible.
Oh, okay, great. That'd be super.
Okay, at the time they go out for bid, once the contract is awarded, we provide the district with some additional funds because most generally the contractor has to have a pretty good chunk of money up front so they can go out and buy materials. Once the job is completed, we require the district to provide us with an audit. And the audit is not only just fiscal in nature, but program in nature. So that the auditor has to not only tell us where the bucks were spent, but he also looks at district information to determine whether or not the building was actually built, and it's consistent with the language of the legislation, and consistent with the various state requirements for fire code compliance, barrier fee compliance, and general architecture standards.
Do you hold the final payment prior to getting the audit?
We hold the payment until we get the audit.
About what percentage of the total amount is left for that audit?
5%.
5%, okay. Senator Fisher?
On the same thing, if I might, we had mentioned in Anna City, I guess I don't see something here, but the appropriation in this project was $400,000.
Excuse me, Senator Fisher, it's this one. What they did is the department gave us this kind of format for their unauthorized, and they transferred it to the form that we're all used to, and you should have had it there. And what these are is this is just a different format for the same projects that are in your governor's book. Do you have it?
Yes.
Okay, great. And Nunan is the first one.
Okay, my question would still be the same. In the one book, though, it shows expenditures of $548,000, but the authorized amount is $398,000. Where did the other two come from?
I guess I'm lost at the moment.
The book that I have shows an appropriation of $400,000. Of course, we can say $398.2,
mm-hmm.
but when it shows expenditures to date, it shows $548,000.
Okay.
Right, that's right, to the column right.
Mm-hmm.
Hold off some funds prior to that, receiving that audit, so I would commend you for that.
Thank you.
Does that work pretty well?
It seems to work pretty well, yeah. I think perhaps there needs to be some refinements in some of the things we require. There seems to be a gap between the time the district awards contract and the project is completed in terms of our participation in any kind of project review or inspection or information we receive from the district.
Okay, now on this non-Dalton water and sewer facility, why do you have the water and sewer facility and not DEC?
Well, I guess it just depends who it's appropriated to. Quite often we have those types of facilities simply because there is no other entity in the area that has the ability to go in and construct that kind of project. DEC, quite often, RSA's money to us for water and sewer projects to be built in conjunction with what the school district happens to be doing on site at the time.
Okay, now non-Dalton, which was a 1982 appropriation, appears to have some money left over there. Is it not going to be spent? How do you retrieve under overfunded projects? Do you ever receive money back or any lapsed money?
Very seldom. I guess the bottom line is when you, just like the commission said before, when you give somebody $100,000 to a job, they're going to spend $100,000.
But if you've got it audited, if you're requiring an audit of the job before they get all the money, don't you have terms for that project? I mean, you were given that project plans, you approved the design criteria, the project went out to bid, so you should know how much that project's going to cost. Why can't you lapse that money? How do you get that money back, or you just don't do?
if there is money truly left over, and there is in some cases, then we get the money back. Most of the time, due to construction problems, design problems, change orders, whatever you will, most of the time, a lot of these projects end up with cost overruns instead of having money left.
Senator Eliason and Halford.
Well, I was going to get back to the DOE overhead. I noticed some of these grants, there are overhead figures, others there are not. How do you determine that? And what is the percentage of overhead you charge?
Percentage varies from year to year. What we do is we take our budget, which we folks approve, and we take the total appropriation and simply divide the appropriation into the budget amount, and that gives us the percentage that we take from each project. And it works out to, I think this year it's somewhere around 0.6%, 0.6%.
No, it's a reasonable charge, but I'm just curious. I noticed there are no charges on a number of these projects. Why not?
Some projects, by the nature of the project, our involvement is so minimal, or the amount of money is so minimal, that we simply don't take it.
Senator Halford?
Yeah, coming back.
Okay. Follow up, just once more.
Go ahead, Senator Eliason.
A $2,700,000 project is not minimal.
Okay, that may have been. What project is it?
Talking about the one here, EEK, as an example. Just an example. There's no overhead on that at all.
Which project?
EEK Elementary Edition, EEK. And it was for $2.7 million. There's no overhead. I noticed some here for 100 and some thousand have an overhead, so I'm just trying to relate to why some and why not the others.
Well,
and
2.7
is not a minimum.
There may be an error in the fact that we may have taken the overhead that doesn't show up in that document for some reason. I suspect we did, because I don't think they don't turn me down a project without taking the overhead.
That may have been a divided project, may have not. In each group, there are several different projects under one heading. Seems to me I remember that there were three, something like that, and that may have been the reason. I don't know, Senator, you can find out.
It's a grant number 57-82.
Thank you.
For example, last year you appropriated $2.5 million to us for asbestos, cost of reimbursing distance for asbestos. Now, we didn't take anything out of that, because basically our involvement was pretty minimal. So we did not assess that amount of money at all.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Coming back to the Nundalton water supply and the question of lapsing extended funds, there's some interesting dates here. If you look on the second, on the back side of the same thing, on the 13th of November, the contract was amended to extend it, but the money spent was, the reporting period on the first page ended September. Or, no, it ended 11/30/84, so the reporting period ended after the contract extension, and there was still, $39,000 there. And what is going to happen to that money?
Okay, assuming that the money is not used on the project, then it would last.
Well, the project is basically completed. I'd like to know what amendment number one is.
Okay.
For that project. Just as an example, find out how.
Is it at the interest of the committee just to go through these projects one at a time?
Well, at least enough of them to know how the system works.
Yeah, because I don't have a good understanding of how the system works yet, and I don't think Senator Eliason does either.
I'd like to make a general statement, and then if you want to go through it, we can proceed to do that. I think it's important that the legislature and that this particular committee understand that the reason, the overriding reason that we have not pursued these things in as aggressive a way as we would like to, is that we are under the understanding that the legislature offers that much money and gives us so few capacities to control the use of that money beyond the audit, that we are not recapturing those monies. And as you must know, there are some projects where local money has gone into a given project way beyond what the authorization, as far as the department was concerned, and that, in turn, impinges on the cost of education throughout the state because of the building of a larger facility than the Department of Education thought was appropriate. You teach us
And the legislature teaches the Department of Education by the authorities and responsibilities that it gives us and our capacity to follow up because of the personnel that we've got. I am not complaining when I say that. I think it's important that the legislature know that if you want tighter controls exercised, and that's why I suggested that bill, which will be forthcoming, I believe, it does suggest some other ways to construct, one of which is not to set a figure for the cost of a project, to allow that project cost to be determined in the process which you, Madam Chair, have suggested you wanted or believed in, and that is the business of bidding. We are not now doing that. So that if I am the superintendent of School District X, and I'm aware that X number of thousands or millions of dollars have been appropriated for the purpose of constructing a school in one of the communities where I work, I will make sure that that money is used. I will do my best to make it well used, but I have all kinds of expansion and contraction possibilities. Jim used the euphemism in the trade, which is change orders. And through change orders, I can construct a school which is a little better, or a little worse, a little bigger, a little smaller, which is better equipped or less well equipped. And the point is, if you expect, and if you'd like the department to take on a more aggressive role in accomplishing what I hear the drift of this questioning going, I'd like to work with the legislature, this committee, whoever's appropriate, to try to develop a more effective way. I made an allusion to this earlier. We can build more buildings in this state for the dollars we appropriate. But we're going to have different sets of controls.
In the book, looking over all the old projects, you only have one that's later than 1981. You have a 1978 appropriation for a generator at Deering. Does that mean we can assume that all other capital projects are closed, except for the 1978 appropriation to Deering, that all other capital monies that the Department of Education got and passed through prior to 1981 are closed out, audited, and accounted for?
I suspect not. I believe probably if we go back and look at our records, we will find some old appropriations that for whatever reasons, maybe some of them are legitimate, maybe some of them aren't, have not been closed out, and the funds are still on the books.
Okay, I want that list of projects, and I want that list of funds.
Okay. I would like to clear up one.
And what's happening to the generator at Deering?
I'd like to clear up a little error on this non-Dalton thing, and I have no idea why it popped in this way, but that amendment simply should not have been included in this particular report.
Why? We like it.
I want to see it.
Okay, you can see it. I have no problem with it, but that's the only one that's in there. The rest of them, the back side of the pages, simply give a brief, in some case almost nothing, in some case pretty good description of what has taken place.
Well, don't apologize for the appearance of the amendment. Remember, I began this hearing today with saying we want to learn, and we want to learn the process. We've been on a wonderful seven-year spending spree, and it has come to a crushing halt. And now we're trying to backtrack and do some things. We should have put it in the process 7 years ago and didn't. We literally were nouveau riche in our spending habits, so now we're having to recap and learn some things. So the appearance of the amendment helps us understand. If it's a problem and it generates a problem, well, so be it. That's what we want to know about. Senator Hopper?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back in this book, another 10 or 12 pages, you get to the Allakaka Power.
Give us the number of the DOE grant number. They're in numerical order.
3382. The Allakaka Powerhouse. Now I don't think they're incorporated. I'm not sure. But I'm trying to find someplace that's unincorporated so they have no way of generating other funds. And I know there's some in here that have overexpended the grant. And then I want to know where the money came from.
Well, there's two or three possible sources. One, local school districts may very well have used some interest funds for that cost overrun.
You mean extra foundation money that they had, didn't spend, put in the bank and generated some interest on it?
Right.
Wonderful.
Or Public Law 874, which gives them a windfall late in the year. In some years, as last year, a very significant amount of money suddenly arrives, federal dollars.
And those are two obvious sources. At the end of the year, if they had operating money left over, which they may have, and it went into some fund balance, they could have transferred it to a capital fund and used that source of money.
Okay. Really quick. Can school districts build things on other people's property, on private property, for school use?
They certainly can if you have an agreement with the property owner.
Well, there's one here on the Chistochina fence, which they built a hockey rink on the property at Chistochina Lodge.
What number are you on? Give us the grant number.
3882.
Just a chain of fence.
Well?
How do you know that was a hockey thing?
Well, if you look at summary of work projected for next year, the amount of money left over is planned to be used for establishing the hockey rink that has been on the Tristatina Lodge property. Now, that has been on? Wait. Plan to be used for establishing. Okay, that may not be on the lodge property. It may be to move it off the lodge property.
Small amount of money left is planned to be used for establishing the hockey rink that had been on the Tristatina Lodge property. Justification. New school was built this past year, and the hockey space froze before holes could be dug for the support posts for the sides of the hockey rink. I have to assume that hockey rink's on school property.
Yeah, I think I'm wrong. I think they moved it off the Tristatina Lodge property with this appropriation.
It's not like that. Yeah. We have schools on all kinds of property owned by private individuals, many corporations, IRA councils. One of the problems we have is trying to get some of the title for this land straightened out.
Okay, let's go to the third one in the book. The third one is grant 14-82B. It's the Lake and Peninsula School District, Chignett Lake and Chignett Bay. You haven't given them any funds, but they've spent $51,144. What's going to happen? I want to know what's going to happen to the $65,000 that you're holding for them.
If this project is complete and that's all the funds that they have spent, and the audit shows that, then the remainder of the money would lapse to the state, to the general fund.
Well, it would lapse into the legislative district so that that legislator in those communities could reappropriate the funds if necessary. Yes. Right.
So all of these school districts have their own running balance all the time with which they can build these projects and then get it back. And then if they happen to get a windfall from 874 monies in the end of the year, they can take a trip or do whatever they want.
Under the present funding system, the ADM approach, which is currently there, 251, the money can be used for teacher housing, it could be used for a new roof, it could be used to build a new elementary school, it could be used for anything that the local district wish to use it for. I think there's a problem.
You've already identified some problems, but could I say one other thing?
Yes, sir.
Lapsing is not necessary in a system which doesn't provide more money in the first place than is needed to construct the facility.
Oh, well, that's correct. But if there's extra money laying around, it's kind of nifty to appropriate more money than you think you might need to have it available for something else down the road.
But I won't comment on that.
Good. Okay. Because I think that's what we're seeing happen sometimes.
But you see, my remark, though, Madam Chair, was directed towards the future and not providing more money than is necessary to construct the facility to minimal standard. By minimal, I don't mean bare minimum. I mean minimum adequate standard. On the other hand, looking towards the past, which is what you're doing with these projects, there are problems regarding lapsed funds.
We want the list of potential lapsed funds.
We have that number.
Okay? Even if you're unsure of one, give us the list, put a maybe by it, and we'll worry about it at this committee. I'm sure there'll be a legislator here that will be able to tell us. Senator Elias and then Senator Hoffman.
Well, you know, I think he has, you know, it's a good theory he has, billing, allowing so much money for the needs, but I've got a number of schools in my district who are comparatively new schools who accommodate X amount of students, which you wouldn't have in Anchorage because they're going to be adapted for your community because it just don't fit the rest of the community. So, then on the other hand, if we're going to build a school in a rural area, which is going to be a model school for Anchorage, it's going to cost us a lot more money. So I don't know how you're going to resolve that situation.
Well, I think that there are ways of establishing what the minimum standard would be, whether it's in Kivalina or in Anchorage or Sitka or Juneau, or you pick your community, and then you bid that, and then you see whether that will build what you want, and then you begin to provide the funds, because you do not, under that system, provide X number of dollars with a label on them to go to a particular community. If we reverse the process and said, as Senator Halford said, we'll have $100 million to spend this year, now let's spend it as efficiently and as effectively as we can, and we use the bid. I believe, Senator Eliason, we can have very significantly different physical facilities to fit the community, which I think you're saying, because there are very grave differences, very considerable differences between communities, among communities.
Correct. course, then the question remains, who's really in control of the school system, the local board of education or the department?
Well, I can respond to that. I don't know if you want to do that here or not.
I mean, this is a problem, right?
Well, I would argue always that the local school committee made the proposal for the funding and justified it on the basis of the, that's your other book, the salmon-colored one, the specifications that are necessary for education, and then they got whatever they needed to do that. I'm not saying that there can be no variations, nor am I adopting the notion of a single model school for a six-room schoolhouse that has to be built wherever it's built. Not at all. I'd leave it entirely in the local community, I believe that's where it belongs, to establish the educational specifications that they want met in their building, and then that building is built, but you don't nail the money out first.
In effect, what you're saying then is that the state will provide X amount of dollars for this particular facility, and if you want to go beyond that, you provide your own cash.
Precisely right. But I think even there, the state's going to have a concern, Senator, as I said earlier. If a community, a very wealthy community, is able to put a great deal more money into it, there has to be some agreement if we're talking about tight accounting for the maintenance and operations. If you make the presumption that it's a 10% cost per year for the maintenance of operations of a building, or whatever your percentage, appropriate percentage would be, then what you're doing by inflating it at the local level is inflating the future costs of that building in terms of maintenance and operation. And that leads to some profligacy too. So you need some kind of understanding of what you're doing when you do that. But yes, I do believe very strongly in local participation in every form of funding.
It's just, I imagine each particular school would have to be, a criteria would have to be established for that particular area. You just can't say this is the grand scheme.
We do
we
it
have
now,
to individually
Sam.
Say this, okay, these are our guidelines.
Yeah. Part of that initial 40%.
And that allows politics to come into play.
Well, I think there's always important room for politics in these things, but there are some ways where they could be reduced somewhat.
Senator Hopper?
Well, you know, it's not just rural schools where we have the problems with lack of oversight.
Oh, no.
You know, it's,
oh, I know that.
You know, there's a school in Juneau, there's a school in Anchorage. The school in Juneau hasn't had the problems yet, but probably had the same examination. I mean, the new junior high in the valley. It's had the same examination that the Greening Junior High did in the Anchorage area. It would probably have some of the same problems. It's got the same kind of multi-copper roof angles and all the beautiful architecture. You know, the architectural cost of that structure is probably $4 million. And they're both the same architect, the same design, and they're way beyond anything that the state should have ever been into. And in the case of Anchorage and Juneau, we directly funded them. We listened to the local school districts. They came back for more money, and in both cases, we gave it to them. And they made one heck of a mess out of it. So it's not just, I'd rather have them have more oversight in terms of, you know, I support the school district, whether it's a regional school board or a local school board, as far as what they want. But when it comes down to when they just go far beyond anything reasonable, it's statewide that they're doing it. And it's organized and unorganized that they're doing it, too. And construction costs are eating us alive.
I think what's happening is that with an open-ended appropriation, with no caps on what they can spend on architectural design, engineering, that kind of thing, with some broad guidelines, percentages of the total on those things, we are building Taj Mahals.
Well, maybe we should take a little more conservative attitude, too. I've had a number of superintendents go back to the drawing board because there simply wasn't enough money to go around. And we've gotten good schools out of it.
Yeah, the problem that we had is we should have sent them back to the drawing board, and instead we gave them more money.
I think you shouldn't come to the conclusion, I think that's what Senator Elias is saying, but in every case we have done these things, or the state has, or individual districts have. There's some extraordinarily good examples of very efficient, very well put together schools at proper kinds of prices. So, you know, as in everything, the picture is mixed.
Well, I heard today that my school district wasn't worried about bonding. They didn't think they had a problem because their priorities were going to be completely funded by the school, by the legislature, and they didn't have to work with any of the other municipalities around us because, I mean, they don't have the problem this year. And that, quite frankly, irritates me. Senator Alford?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that easy, and the thing I need is the second thing on their overall priority list.
But it's not their overall priority list because the municipality isn't talking to the school district. They're letting the school district fight theirs and letting the muni fight theirs. We need one list from our community, not 14.
But the thing I'm wondering about is whether we should, instead of appropriating school projects as municipal grants, we should appropriate school projects, whether they're organized or unorganized, through the Department of Education.
Well, but the Department of Education then has to have some specific set criteria that they don't have exceptions on, so that there's a limited amount of political pressure for those dollars, too.
But their overhead costs are almost negligible by comparison to what the overhead costs are in local school districts or in the municipality of Anchorage or municipalities. And I don't think their overhead is going to hurt a bit. Their oversight might do a lot of good.
Let's go to Grant 1582, the Andrewski High School. Is that what that is? St. Mary's School District? It's like the fourth one in. Expenditures to date, 1757, but funds received to date, 1791. How does that happen?
Okay, wait. Run your question by me again, please.
Well, according to the expenditures to date, they've spent 1757. Mm-hmm. But funds received to date, item number 7 down there at the bottom, 1791 has been received. So they've received more money than they've spent, and I've wondered how they did that.
The difference is in column 5, construction contracts. That's the big difference.
That's where the construction contract probably is exactly where it is. That's your construction contract usually, and this is going to vary from contract to contract, you pay the contractor a pretty good chunk of money up front, a big percentage, 30, 40, 50%. And then you have a payment schedule, which is based on, again, depending on the contract, usually two conditions. One is simply a time schedule. Every month or 6 weeks or 2 months, you pay a specified amount. Or it's based on project completion. When the project is 50% complete, you get so much. When it's 70% complete, you get so much more. And so on. So the district is holding that money then for the contractor, in essence.
Okay. Caltag 2182, UConn, Cook School District, Caltag, Bulkhead Shop Renovation. We've talked about that, haven't we?
Okay, what's your question there?
Nothing.
Oh.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Paul.
Can we go back to 1582?
Sure.
Okay, just look at equipment.
We're back to 1582.
1582. Why would we have a 50% increase over the budgeted equipment? In other words, there's $123,000 in the budget. And it seems to me if you're building a school, that's one thing with a new school, you know what you need equipment-wise. You know, if you do your job at all, you would know this is the equipment. Could their estimate or could their bids be off 50%? It seems like a pretty high figure from $123,000 to $183,000.
It certainly does. I won't argue that point at all. It is a high figure. The exact reason why the equipment cost more than they anticipated, I couldn't guess. Your anticipated budget, your initial budget, is based a lot on speculation. It's one of the things you know, the very first thing in your contract. You don't know today, when you budget for equipment, that you're going to buy probably 2 years from now, the exact cost is going to, you're going to get, the price you're going to get, or what your freight rates are going to be. So it could be that kind of variance that made it much higher than I thought it would be.
Senator Fisher.
When a school district submits their plans, et cetera, to the department for okay, for approval, do they not submit a list of capital equipment also?
No, they do not. Not in my way.
Okay, so maybe this is the flaw. What I would like to see if you're going to come up with some kind of tightening the system, as I see it right now, there's no way to prevent overbuying. For example, this high school might have a need in another school for equipment, but they could buy that through the new high school, and you'd never know. There's no, I always thought there was like 10% of the capital cost you could put in equipment, but apparently that's not true anymore. So there's no guidelines as to equipment, right?
So they Department of Transportation Public Facilities used to have some guidelines that they followed, but we don't have any specifically. Right? Percentage. And that would vary from place to place depending on the amount of appropriation, the size of the job, the location, whatever.
You know, Madam Chair, I guess I'm really concerned with this because serving on the Borough Assembly for 7 years, that used to be one of my biggest problems because we finally got to the point where they had to come to us with their equipment list for approval. And we saw grand pianos and all this kind of stuff done, and they're probably just sitting there now because the argument used to always be, well, if we have an artist come into town, we need a grand piano. Well, maybe you have an artist once every 2 years. And, you know, when you spend $14,000, $15,000 for items like this, I also see where a high school, if you build a brand new one, that music equipment doesn't float with the new school. You can't use that anymore. You've got to buy all brand new band equipment. And somewhere, I think, if the state's paying the bill, the state has to set some criteria for equipment. And I would suggest, Madam Chair, if we're coming up with something to tighten this up, I think equipment is one area where we really have to draw the line that you just can't go and spend and spend and spend. what I saw on the local level, and comes the ending of the period, my gosh, the things that come in as they want to buy are things that are wants or dreams that at the beginning of the project nobody would ever dare dream they would buy. And I think this is probably prevalent throughout the state. So if we can tighten up on the equipment too to some level that they know ahead of time that the state will not go beyond that, even though they say, well, 50-50, we're giving our 50%. But that's an area, as I see it here, is getting a lot of hand.
Senator Eliason, do you have Petersburg?
Not any longer.
Not any longer? Okay. After the blue piece of paper in here, if I could jump to the Petersburg Schools, grant number 0383. There's a blue piece of paper in your project deal, and this is the second project in after that blue sheet. Petersburg Schools, it says, I just would like to have this thing explained to me here. Funds received to date is $450,000, expenditures is $17,000. Did you find it?
Okay,
it's the second one.
Okay.
The back sheet says they're having trouble with construction.
I'm not sure I'm on that page yet.
They're probably holding money they haven't paid the company that was due.
Wrangell City, we're on. What is it again now?
Petersburg Schools.
0383.
0383.
Right.
The second one behind the blue case. Okay, you're right there where it's at.
I'm at the wrong blue insert.
There seems to be a number of blue inserts.
I think you divided up your school district.
Thank you. No.
This looks like the first blue insert from the front.
But we have Senator Fisher's copy here anyway. I'll proceed to try to find it.
Okay.
Okay, what specific concern or question do you have?
The fact that the funds that they received to date is so much larger than the expenditures to date. Where's the money?
Undoubtedly, they've got an account drawing interest.
This school was funded. Now, I recall a corporation. I did represent the district at that particular time, and it was just a small step towards funding the school district. Their needs were like $8 or $10 million. So, this is some money we had available at that time to throw into that project. So I don't know what's happened since then, but I do know that the corporation didn't near meet the needs. But it was patchwork. Little this year, little next year, folks were trying to do it.
So the department then doesn't have as strong a hold on the phasing of giving the money to the school district as you would hope you could have.
I believe that would be just a matter of changing our procedures. I don't think it's regulation yet. It's a matter of changing our procedures where we could make more payments over a longer period of time and give them less money instead of...
I guess it's a policy call as who earns the interest, the general fund or the school district. See, I don't object to the phasing in of a project. I think that's fine. But it's the policy call of who should be getting the interest on that money, who should hold the money and waiting for the rest of the money to come. And right here, the school district is earning this interest on $400,000+. Any questions, other questions on back projects? Senator
Howell. Yeah, going back a little bit further in the same area, right behind Petersburg, is the ACTAC. I just noticed some terminology that looks kind of strange. Basically, they've got $295,000 and they're going to go back and rebid it to cut the scope down. But it says the project bid informally was something over cost. Redesign and costing is now underway. I wonder how you get an informal bid. Is that going to be ended up being a totally negotiated process, or are they under the competitive bidding requirements, or how do they work that?
Generally, they'd be under the competitive bidding requirements, and without going back to our expanded file, I couldn't give you a specific answer as to whether we gave them a waiver or not. But sometimes in places like Yakutat, for that amount of money, the formal bid process, you may not get any bidders outside of Yakutat simply because the cost of mobilization is so high to get crew and equipment on site. It may very well be that it's going to be a negotiated process.
I could be wrong, Madam Chair, but that's also my district that I think that it... I don't recall any school projects in Yakutat per se who have not been bid. But they have some ongoing programs, or maybe they had a contractor in finishing one job and a chance to negotiate, and as long as he's in there to finish another job, I don't know. But
well, it sounds like in the next thing, it says project to be rebid with the high school in March of 1985. So if you can believe the back of the page here, in next month, they're going to package the deal and go out for one bid to try to save some money. Isn't that what that looks like?
Yeah, it does. So I would expect that further back we'd find the high school appropriation. Is there a high school appropriation outstanding in the architect?
Right. Okay, I'm sure there is. I don't have any problem at all with that school district. They're really...
They're good guys.
Very good.
Okay. What I'd like to know is here in the back, 1583, further back from Yakutat, back in the thing, is district-wide life safety for Yukon Koyukuk School District. And then I see Lower Yukon Schools in the current budget, district-wide health safety upgrade for $950,000. I want to know what those are.
Well, I'd certainly be glad to hear the detailed information the school district sent us when they requested that money.
Okay, so the school, that is standard, customary for school districts to ask for a lump sum of money in a general category like that?
Quite often they do that, yeah.
Do you evaluate each individual project requested to make sure that it truly is life safety, or just a way to get to the top of the list in the category?
We evaluate it as much as we can within the limitations we have in terms of staff time, personnel.
Are these school districts basically on the honor system with the Department of Education?
Are they basically what?
Are the school districts both organized and unorganized on the honor system as far as your department's concerned?
Yes.
Okay.
We have supported documentation that the district supplies, fire marshal's reports. There's an old doc study that was done, I think, in 78, which is now obviously dated. But still, most of the information in there is still valid. DEC inspectors' reports that they file. Quite often, districts will have their own A&E firms do an extensive analysis of the conditions of existing schools throughout the district.
Okay, here's another one. 1683, Southwest Region Schools, life safety. Now, you would think that it was a life safety, that those funds would be expended right away, right? I mean, it's life safety. Somebody's going to die, correct? Funds received to date, $738,750. Expended, $14,000. Now, you would conclude again that somebody's saving their money and earning interest, right?
I would assume that would be the conclusion they have to make.
If they aren't earning interest, that's another problem.
Now, it says summary of work accomplished this year. Emergency repairs completed. Well, it looks like the emergency repairs were $14,000 and the extra money was $738. Can I conclude that? Would a reasonable person conclude that?
I would say so, yes.
Ah, this is as bad as budget and audit. Has everybody found that section, Southwest Region Schools?
Another question. A whole other area.
Okay.
How do the legislators decide whether they're going to go municipal grants or go through DOE?
Expect they make that. You got to ask them.
That's your decision, folks. Well, I can't. I think probably most municipalities would much rather have the funds come to the municipal grant program for two reasons. One, the Department of Education does not assess it in terms of percentage for our overhead, and two, some municipalities may wish to keep that money in their municipal accounts and draw interest to be used by a municipality as opposed to school district drawing interest for school district purposes.
Well, the reason I'm curious is we put some of the Anchorage school district projects through. There's one in yours and three in mine, through DOE. And I can't remember why we did it. Mears is through DOE. It's not a municipal grant. And all these little projects were in my district. Homestead, Eagle River, Ursa Major, Ursa Minor. I guess we ought to find out which works better.
Yeah. See now. What I'm doing is the Yukon Koyukluk School District, I don't know who that is, they had a $743,000 appropriation for life safety in 1983 grant. They've gotten $669,000, and they're in the budget again for $750,000. Oh, boy, are people ever going to hate me when this is over?
1583?
Yeah, 1583 is, I'm back to Yukon Koyukluk. We have 10 individual projects here. We don't know the status of them, but they have received $669,000, and they're in the budget again for health, life, safety upgrade of another $750,000.
And the governor's book.
Yeah, the point is, are we? So that's why we need the status of those other 10. And we need to see how they got in there for another $750,000. I'm not picking on them, because we're going to pick on Anchorage too, believe it or not.
Can't seem to find it. Anchorage must have a separate book of their own.
Yeah, probably.
Now, most of it goes through municipal grants. And there's a lot of things that go to other communities through municipal grants, too. I'm trying to figure out what the difference is and why.
Well, you've touched on some of them, but the one you haven't mentioned is that, as a matter of fact, one of the advantages of a municipal grant is the advantage that I've been suggesting this morning about construction in general, and that is that in the municipal grant process, they can manage the money that they get as effectively as they can to build as many buildings as they can, unless the municipal grant is specified for one particular object. Well, of course, that's always an advantage. And if you were seriously considering a rewriting of capital funding legislation for any part of the capital budget, but particularly schools, there is a very important advantage to be considered if you lump sum to a body that you believe can maintain the kind of order and direction and purpose which many of your questions are designed to approach. So the one advantage of the municipal grant system, it takes it, of course, out of the business of having to float bonds and having to do all those kinds of things in most cases, is that it permits a very skilled operation to make sure that we get as much for those dollars as we can get. So there is an advantage of a lump sum to some place, some entity, over individual grants.
Okay.
I'm citing only one advantage. There are some disadvantages, too. But most of what you've said this morning, as I read it, and the going through of these things, Madam Chair, is designed to get at some of the flaws in the system, more
it's
than it is
accountability,
to...
Commissioner. We haven't used that term around here for quite a while, and I think we can lump sum it to the tune of accountability. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, sir.
Sorry.
Michael, let me ask you, can Ledge Finance do this for us? Can you... What I need is a different format here. I think all the information's here, it's just not easily found. I would like you to take every school district, every one of them, list out for the last couple of years the projects they've gotten, the headings, life safety, how much it was, and then what they're coming in for this budget for, the 86 budget, so that we can see if there's a pattern there. Do you understand what I'm asking for? Okay. I just want the information in different formats. And I want it in columns, I guess. The list of school districts, then the kind of projects across the top, new school building or whatever, or life safety, general category, and then the amount of money in the various years that they got it. Is that possible? Make a matrix for us? Okay.
Madam Chairman, it appears the only one of the previous health and life safety things that they've been able to build was the warehouse at Ruby.
I beg your pardon?
For your 1583 district-wide health and life safety 10 individual project, the completed warehouse at Ruby for $197,000.
That's a life safety? Well, maybe it is life safety. I don't think so, though.
Ask Senator Sackett.
They're going to be sorry they missed these meetings, Senator Fisher.
It could be life safety, sure. and because the sprinkler system, maybe they didn't have a sprinkler system, so therefore it would be considered.
It says completed the warehouse. It doesn't say fix the sprinkler system.
Well, they built the warehouse around the sprinkler system.
Now we're back to fire flow reservoirs.
How many fire flow reservoirs have you built this year?
That might be life safety, come think of it.
Swimming pools.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Light.
It's not unusual. Now, you were saying grants to a certain entity, which is you have confidence in. Well, we've made a number of grants to our school district in Sitka, specifying specific projects. And they've completed them. You know, and they maybe left $30,000-$40,000 on the table. And they say, well, this is for a school project, but we also had this problem in the other, in the same school. We'd like to have you reappropriate that money. And that's our lever there. We reappropriate, we change the language, and they use it as long as it's in that school district. I don't object to that. I think it's good management.
Yeah, we did very well in Anchorage until a couple of years ago, and then things started to fall.
They come back to the legislature and ask for it. They said, we have this much money available, and we'd like to use it on this specific project. And, you know, we reappropriate it. So we do have the ability to our own system of cross-checking on the projects if you think that the grants far exceed their needs. But the original grant, you should have to narrow the language down to that specific project period, and then they'll come back and they have money left over.
I have no objections to that, because, but I think we need to see it and look at it.